Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for July 21st, 2008, and on this episode, Ann Nicholson Weber interviews lighting designer Chris Bender and choreographer Sylvia Hernandez de Stasi. They'll be talking about their work on Looking Glass Alice. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago, and let's talk theater.
Hello, I'm Ann Nicholson Weber, and this is Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Today I'm talking to Sylvia Hernandez de Stasi and Chris Bender, both of whom are involved with the Looking Glass Alice production, which is just being remounted for, I think, the sixth time here in Chicago at the Water Tower Looking Glass Theater. Sylvia is the choreographer. Chris is the lighting designer for the show. And some of the challenge of that, of course, in an audio interview is that people don't know what it looks like. So we'll try to describe things as we go to give a little context. I think it would be interesting to start with the question what it's like to remount a show six times and how this particular production may have changed from the earlier incarnations. Maybe you could start, Sylvia?
Well, because a lot of the actors have returned, three of the actors have actually done the show six times. One has done it three and the other one has done it twice. You have to keep the actors on their toes. So if you just ask them to do, you know, the exact same thing over and over and over again for six productions over 3 years, is that what it was? You know, they will get bored. So, I grew up in the circus where you did one routine for your whole life. Uh-huh. And, you know, you perfected it and that's all you did. But since I've been working with actors, I've noticed that they don't work that way. And I've started to adapt a little bit. Well, you know, this works really well, but the actors are looking a little, you know, kind of bored with it. So I just throw in some extra dance moves or a couple of different, you know, lifts or a trick here and there that I thought I could have added before, but they weren't up for adding anything new. But now that they're comfortable with certain elements, they can, you know, do more difficult stuff or just change things around.
All right. Is there anything specific that you added for this production that you really love?
Well, my son actually added some hip hop moves to the Tweedles dance section, and I found that really fun.
Why don't you quickly just describe what that scene is?
The Tweedles scene is, it's Tweedledee and Tweedledum, and they come in and see Alice, they have a dance off for her affection, sort of.
It's a kind of a wonderful way to express sibling rivalry.
Yes, yeah, and there's a little battle because that's what they do in the story. But they have a dance off with one of the actors beatboxing as background, and I think that's really fun.
Well, Chris, how about for you? Has the lighting evolved?
Yes, it's definitely evolved. I come from, a lot of the work I do is in opera. And when we revive a show, it is verbatim sort of the same thing every single time you revive it. And this is very different in that the show changes, really, in sometimes big ways and sometimes small ways it's changed. So the lighting has been able to grow and refine, been able to really take things that were a germ of an idea two shows ago and really build it into something more substantive in this performance. So, for example, when we did the caterpillar the first time, it was just very green light and very side lit and was really beautiful. But as that scene developed and the choreography changed and the circus elements of it changed and evolved, we evolved the lighting too, so it became more sort of forest-like and dots of light as opposed to more side-lit than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So those kinds of things have really changed, and we've been able to take things and bring them to a new level, which has been really nice and something that I don't get to do when I do an opera,
right?
When I revive an opera. And that's sort of been true of a lot of the show. We've been able to take it to more interesting places in a way that I'm not used to.
Just being able to revisit something
right.
so many
yeah.
times.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
Well, I could hardly imagine a greater contrast between lighting this and lighting opera, because I think of opera as very static. You have the singers really can't move a lot, and you tend to have big static chorus scenes and big static arias, and this is as kinetic a kind of theater
right.
as there is. So
right.
maybe you can talk about how that changes what you have to do.
Well, it depends on the opera and the director.
Mm-hmm.
But this show certainly is it obviously very active and lends itself to being able to sculpt in different ways, and the setup of the space is so long and thin.
Describe that, because it's very important in the
well,
show.
Well, there's a performance space in the middle of the audience, essentially. So there's one long performance space with audience on each of the long sides.
Right.
So it's we call it alley.
It's I was going to say, it's like being ranged along a bowling alley, facing
exactly,
the other half of the audience.
Right, yeah. right. So part of what that does is that it puts the audience very close to the action. And what we've done with this production, too, is put the actors in different places so that they're closer to some audience in one scene and then closer to a different part of the audience in another scene, which makes it really accessible and really intimate. Some of my friends who have come to see it are used to seeing shows at the Chicago or the Oriental, and when they walked into the space, they said, I was shocked at how small it was. It
yeah.
was tiny. And I said, yeah, that's what makes it really fun and really gives the audience an opportunity to really interact in ways that they don't get to at the Chicago or at the Oriental or even the Steppenwolf or the Goodman.
Right.
You
know,
you just
like
don't
having
have
an actor sit in your lap. For
absolutely. Yes. Yeah, literally, right?
Throwing balls back
right,
onto the stage.
Right, right,
yeah.
right. Yeah. So, I mean, in that way, it's so much more, in a lot of ways, it's more fun. In some ways, there are some headaches involved with it, too.
For the designer, you mean?
For, yeah, yeah. Because we actually, I think, hit on a really good thing this year that we did all of the circus kind of planning before I got in and started my focus of the lights and pointed the lights in the right direction. What we had experienced in other cities and in other incarnations of this is that I would focus all the lights based on what we had done previously. Mm-hmm. And then they'd get in and they'd say, oh, wouldn't it be great if,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
if them did this? And I'd say, well, sure, that's great. Now it involves moving some lights and, you know, changing this and changing that. So we really hit, I think, on an itinerary of events that involves a much more headache-free kind of setup and still allows us to be really, all of us to be really creative.
You know, we learn as we go.
Six times you finally yes. start to get it right.
Yeah. yeah, we were sort of laughing about that. And actually, there was a lot that stayed the same with the lighting, and I think that's paramount to being able to experiment and make it better. If you start with that thing that is very solidly the same and
right.
works really well, mm-hmm. then you're afforded the opportunity and the time to make it better.
Otherwise, you're just doing a first draft each time.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
Exactly, right.
Well, talk about, Chris, the challenge of lighting the alley. I was thinking about that. You have no backdrop, essentially. There's nothing
right.
behind the
right.
actors as the audience experiences it. So I imagine that changes a lot what you can use.
Haze. The answer to that is haze in the air, smoke in the air. So we knew right away that one of the tricks sort of certainly things like rock and roll and dance is that you use a lot of haze in the air because then you can see the beams of light.
Mm-hmm.
So those become the vertical visual. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit, of course, there's a lot of circus that's up in the air, right? So that provides a good vertical. But being able to create an atmosphere that's full of haze. So the haze goes from the moment we step through the looking glass, the haze starts, and it doesn't stop through the whole production.
That's so interesting because I was not aware of it. I didn't ever say, oh, there's haze.
Well, that's good. That's
yeah.
good because we just want you to be able to feel it. That's
yeah.
sort of that's one of the tricky things about lighting is that I think successful lighting is frequently not noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only noticed when it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's right, the audience just gets pulled into the environment.
It's subliminal. It's affecting what you
absolutely.
Feel, but you don't notice
absolutely.
It. Well, I did notice this, and I'm not that Uh-oh. Visually oriented, but I noticed that it was very cool. All of the lights were blues and greens, and is that right, first of all?
That is, yes. We talked about the idea of really no color in the lighting, mm-hmm. or cool white light, or mm-hmm. warm white light, mm-hmm. because what we wanted was for the environment to be unencumbered by that until we wanted to impose it deliberately. So in the Tweedles, for example, we do lots of color for their little dance, their dance breaks, right? For the Red Queen, we have this blast of red light that, mm-hmm. that lights her when she enters and when she makes her exit, right? So in that sense, then, color became an exclamation point.
Right.
And because a long time ago, someone said to me, you know, the more complicated the story, the simpler the design should be. Mm-hmm. So this is a very simple design in a very complex kind of way. I think everyone's approach is very simple, and to make it look as simple as possible and as effortless as possible.
Well, you also are doing double duty because essentially you're the scenic designer as
yes.
well.
Yes, yes. And you know, Dan did the walls of light were in the set design really from mm-hmm. the very beginning that are on either side of the alley, the short sides of the
and
alley.
And are they fluorescent? Or at least it seemed to me there was fluorescent light in
there. There was some fluorescent, uh-huh. right? There was some fluorescent, but a lot of that is just stage lighting on the very sort of underneath all of those platforms, so that when we get to the point where Alice is completely exasperated after the tea party, mm-hmm. we can blast that side of the stage, one side, mm-hmm. with light, mm-hmm. just sort of, again, a little exclamation point on the harrowing elements of that moment
right.
for her.
Right. It is. The whole audience is going crazy. It's really frustrating.
Yes.
Well, Sylvia, could you talk about how, you're billed as the choreographer and the circus captain. First of all, circus captain, I assume, is essentially the choreographer for the circus work. Is that right?
Yes. With Looking Glass Alice, the show was written, David Catlett wrote the show for the actors that he cast originally.
Yeah.
So he knew that, you know, my husband, Larry DeStasi, could, you know, ride a unicycle, so the White Knight was going to be, you know, always on a wheel. And Lauren Hurt has been a student of mine at the Actors Gym since she was 18.
This is the Alice.
So, you know, Catlett knew her. We cast her as Sissy in Hard Times originally, and she did a lot of aerial work. She played the circus girl. So we knew going in who we were working with and what the capabilities were. When we recast some of the parts were reworked, and some of the skills were just taught to the new actors. And as the circus captain, I am, you know, responsible for continuing to train the understudies and keeping an eye on things that if tricks go awry, I come in and I take a look and see, you know, what's happening and how to fix it and stuff like that, and make sure that it all works.
Well, what's different about, is it called choreographing when you're talking about the aerial work or the circus work?
Yeah, I originally a while back, I never considered myself a choreographer. I guess it's been about 10 years. And then I was nominated for a Jeff Award in choreography. And I was like, well, that's interesting. And then I realized that, you know, anytime you string movement together, you're choreographing. But we do a lot of collaborative. I don't come in and say, you're going to do this trick and this trick and this trick. You know, I say, let's try this and let's try that. Or what do you guys, you know, feel comfortable trying? And so I pick out stuff that that, you know, looks good, and then I modify it to look the way that I want it to look, and, you know, to help the story.
So you are using a kind of improvisational approach even for the circus work. I didn't know that. That
yes.
surprises me, actually.
Yes, a lot of the stuff that I do. Because, like I said, when I grew up in the circus, every trick, and I've said this so many times, I hope people aren't bored with it, but every trick was done specifically. This trick is done this way, this trick is done this way. But then when I started working with students with varying abilities, I realized that, you can modify, or actors with varying abilities, you can modify stuff, and it's not, you know, the technical way perfect, you know, form, like as like gymnastics. You know, gymnastics has a specific form.
Very codified.
Yeah, that's the way you do it. Mm-hmm. And that's the way I grew up. But now I've modified things and, you know, to make it work for storytelling as opposed to, you know, just spectacle and here's my trick. You know?
Right. Well, that leads to what I thought was really maybe my favorite thing about the show, which was the way that some of the circus work told a story. And the particularly maybe you could talk about Alice's dance on the three loops of rope, which I found really moving. Just, and I couldn't explain why. Tell me, why was that moving?
Well, the story of the cloud swing is Alice's struggle to get above the muck and mire of her, you know, life or her journey or whatever. And what we were, you know, we were, the idea was that she was, you know, tangled up in all this confusion and that her, you know, her, what her journey was to get to the top and to get above it all. And with that specific act is what we call it. It was a lot of improvise, you know, and then it's changed a little bit. Like it was a little circusy and we're like, well, that trick doesn't really say what we're trying to say, but oh, if she grabs her foot with the rope, then she looks tangled, then it works, you know? So we figured out a way to get her more tangled in the three ropes and, you know, and then getting out of it like a, cat's cradle kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that was really fun.
And yeah, I could imagine if you did a complete trick in the sequence of that, it would end it. That's the culmination. But instead, she's just getting more and more tangled, and it's so intricate and confusing. And then there's such a sense of arrival when she makes it up to that top rope completely clear. Mm-hmm. Is that a standard setup, those three loops?
No.
I'd never seen that. So that's something you invented in order to tell this?
We've actually done it before. We, you know, we work on things at the gym, and a lot of the times when we talk about the process of the circus, some of the times, you know, we think, what could we use to tell this story? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we say, we have this apparatus. How can we use this apparatus to tell the story? Mm-hmm. We already have these skills.
Right.
You know, so we can work from both ends with the circus. Mm-hmm. I had put up the three cloud swings a couple of years ago for a Flying Griffin circus that we did at the Actors Gym. And Lauren did a totally different style of act using the three ropes. Mm-hmm. And again, we did the same thing. We were like, you go up there and see, you know, what you come up with, you know, and how you can get into stuff and out of stuff. But it's all about experimenting and coming up with what, you know, what looks good and what works for the story.
Is there a plug-in? Well, Chris, maybe you could talk about how the culture, because Sylvia, I think, is so much part of it, she might not even see. What's the culture of Looking Glass like compared to other companies that you've worked with?
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. You know, I have always said that some of my most vital and most challenging work has been done with Looking Glass. Mm-hmm. And there is definitely a collaborative atmosphere that exists at Looking Glass that I have not found anywhere else that I work, really. Mm-hmm. You begin very early getting together as a team, just talking. You talk about the show. You talk about things around the show. You just talk about maybe sometimes things that have nothing to do with the show, but you become an ensemble. The team becomes an ensemble itself, which is, I think, very unique to theater. And when we all learn theater, that's what everyone tells you that it is. And then you go off and you do it and you discover that, in fact, many companies or places that you work don't embrace that kind of collaboration. So it's really nice to be a part of that process, because then I carry that with me into other places that I work too and really try to make those experiences as collaborative as I can.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, it's very, very unique. And there are times when I will admit you're doing something different for the 900th time and it gets a little, it can be sort of frustrating at times, but
Say that again, that you're doing something new, something you haven't done before?
Something you haven't done before, and you're trying a new way, for example, to do the caterpillar. And you're trying it again in a different way. And sometimes it gets really frustrating, but I think the frustration is born of, you know, you can. There's something on the tip of your brain that is that's trying to get there, and I think everybody feels that in different ways. Mm-hmm. And then finally you hit on it. And suddenly the frustration you felt is completely insignificant and you're
because of the triumph of finding it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
But you're saying with another company that wouldn't happen because what?
Well, I think that Looking Glass is dedicated to a very organic process. Mm-hmm. And it's not frequently in other companies, it's not as sort of, you know, finding your way through it together.
So there's more patience for just noodling around? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, yes. And there's actually great excitement in that. And that process, I think Looking Glass builds into its schedule, too.
I see.
Yeah. We had a very, when we revived it last year, it was really wham, bam. And we sort of did it very, very, very quickly. It was rehearsed, it was up, and it was, you know, opened. This time we really took our time again. We had an extremely leisurely kind of process.
Yes, we did.
It sort of felt like, you know, yeah. Okay, let's rehearse a little more today. And so what it did was it really relaxed everyone.
Mm-hmm. Well, talk about the risk, which is something that I think the audience is pretty aware of throughout the show when you have people up high and no nets and apparently no safety backup that I was aware of.
Well, that is the thing that I found most challenging with putting circus in to theater because, you know, circus is about risk. It's about thrills. It's about, you know, like pretending you're going to fall when mm-hmm. you know you're not going to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, accidents happen, but, you know, thankfully, you know, rarely. So with putting it into a story, you have to be careful not to pull the audience out of the story.
Right.
So the skills that we do are rehearsed a lot. And if they're not 100%, they don't go in the show. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if anything, we have skills that are like, oh my gosh, this is my favorite part of this number. But if it's not hit 100% before we open, it's out. And then we talk about bringing it back in because the actors like enjoy the challenge of, you know, of doing something new and something risky. They have actually asked, can we keep working on it? And he put it in
once
later everything else has calmed down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had a specific skill that we were working on for opening, and it just got to the point where we hit it every time in rehearsal. But then when we did it in the preview, the music, the lights, everything, the excitement, it wasn't, you know, working 100% of the time.
So we had
to take it out.
Mm-hmm. And just so I understand, that's because you don't want the audience to start thinking about that.
Right. We don't want anyone to get hurt,
right.
You know, as well.
Right.
I mean, but in, you know, I know the difference. You know, I know the difference between, oh, if this skill doesn't work, somebody's going to get hurt, mm-hmm. as opposed to if this skill doesn't work, it's just going to kind of
be
make everybody distracted from
mm-hmm.
the show.
Mm-hmm.
There's always an element of risk with the work that I do, but I'm always really confident that the actors are, you know, in a place that is minimized. You know, they're, you know, people, I always say at this moment, you need to not be acting. You need to be focusing on the way that your foot is being, you know, is mm-hmm. being wrapped, because mm-hmm. if you are so much into your character that you forget that this wrap goes, you know, to the left and not to the right, you know, that is going to be a big problem. And I tell all my actors and my understudies that, you know, at this moment,
you're exempt from acting.
All you're thinking about yeah. is this, you know, particular move. And with specifically with the cloud swing, because the moves are pretty intricate, you know, actually, Lauren has told me on several occasions, people said, I can tell you're improvising. And we were like, whoa,
that's great.
That is so wrong. We're not improvising at all. You know,
right.
There's a really specific way. And when we teach the understudy, it's really complicated to
but
teach her.
But it's good that they think that.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I
alive.
Said.
Yeah.
I said,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
Then it looks, then you're doing
it,
your
it
job.
It accomplishes what you're trying to do.
So, but we, you know, we are we are, you know, sure to rehearse over and over again until it's not even in your mind anymore. It's just in your, it's in your body.
Right.
And you know exactly where,
right.
you know, where you're
you
going.
You can kind of go into automatic pilot and it
yeah.
will happen.
Right.
Right. Right. Well, speaking of risk, I don't want to give anything away for people who haven't seen it, but the Humpty Dumpty fall, is that safe?
Yes.
Okay. I'll believe you.
That's so rehearsed.
Yes.
It is so rehearsed. And even when you get to a new city, the it's very exactly measured.
Yeah. I
and
hope
the
so.
Size of the where he falls is exactly measured.
Right.
What he lands in is exactly placed.
Right.
There are tape marks where his head has to land, but I will say though, the first time that I saw
it's always scary the first time
cow.
You're watching.
I mean, the audience
man
screams. I screamed. I really think I screamed.
Yeah.
It just can't believe.
It's really great when you're right there in the front row and you.
Yeah. Phew. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and that trick was designed by a designer from Cirque du Soleil. That,
wow.
you know, so Scott Osgood, who I grew up with in the circus, we brought him in originally to design that, and he is, you know, he's all about safety, and, you know, nothing is left to, you know,
to chance. Right.
So, yeah, that is.
There was the one leanerator issue, though.
Oh, the leanerator. we have the trick with the White Queen where she leans out. I don't even
know. Oh, yes, on the
her
side.
First
yeah.
scene.
Yeah. When we were in Philadelphia, because of sight lines, you couldn't really see her.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to lean out. And
describe a little bit what that is, because people haven't seen it.
The White Queen is an elderly woman who is knitting on a scaffolding. And because of the sight lines in Princeton,
right.
We had to have her, who is played by Larry DeStasi, again.
Your husband.
My husband. Lean out so they could be seen behind the
proscenium.
Proscenium.
Yeah.
And he is attached to a belt, and the stagehand would attach his belt and tap him and say, "You're in," and then he would lean out. But during rehearsals, and this is about a 10-foot
yeah.
platform
yeah.
in Princeton. It's higher here.
Right.
The stagehand said, "You're not hooked in," but my overacting husband was like, "Whoa!" And he leaned out and he fell on his face. And I was sitting in the audience with my son, and we just screamed and just went running down. And he like stood up and he was totally in character. He's like, "I'm all right. Let's keep going." And the director was like, "Hold."
This was in a preview.
It was in a preview.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So we put. I mean, and that was no one's fault. That was, you know, Larry again, you know, being, you know, in character and and just ready to go. We've changed it. We kept the leanerator, which is just a silly name that we made up for it because we thought it was cool.
Uh-huh.
But now he hooks himself in, so he knows that he's hooked in, and you know he knows.
There can't be any miscommunication.
No miscommunication.
Right.
But it was
wow.
really scary looking, which is so silly because you have Lauren flying and swinging all over the place, and then you have this little silly little lean out thing, and that's the one that
causes a problem.
Causes a problem. Although he was fine, he was, you know, he came
which
back.
Which I'm amazed by.
And your son was fine.
My son was a little
traumatic.
Shaken. Yeah, he was a little shaken. He would not go backstage. He was like, "Go find out if Daddy's all right. I'll wait here." And I was like, "Well, let's go." And you know, it's always a little. You know, it shakes you up.
Of course.
You know, and I screamed.
I bet you screamed.
Really loud. Louder than anyone ever screamed for Humpty, I tell you.
Is there talk of remounting it yet again?
There is always talk.
Yes.
There's always talk. But we have this Phantom Winnipeg thing. Apparently some theater from Winnipeg contacted Looking Glass and said, "We'd love to bring Looking Glass Alice to Winnipeg." And everyone's like,
"Not in February."
Not so
well, we're glad that you remounted it here again so that people who haven't seen it can. It really has some extraordinary things in it. And
and if they have seen it, they should see it again because there is a lot of new stuff.
That's right.
A lot of new,
right.
Yes.
exciting, magical stuff put in.
Well, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of July 21st, 2008. The Theater Building Chicago is proud to present Stages 2008, a festival of new musicals in progress and panel discussions about musical theater in America. The three-day musical extravaganza runs Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, August 15th through the 17th, and focuses on the development of the new material, the craft of writing, and the talent of the performers. The new musicals included in the 15th season of the Stages Festival are Here on This Hill, Three Generations of Men in an Amusingly Dysfunctional Family. Take Me America, based on the true stories of nine asylum refugees. Belle Barth, If I Embarrass You, Tell Your Friends, featuring the body humor of nightclub comic Belle Barth. And Killala Bay, where Broadway meets Riverdance. Stages 2008 also features a series of panel discussions reflecting the ever-changing world of musical theater. For tickets and more information, click on over to Theater in Chicago's Coming Soon section. The Chicago Department of Cultural Affairs Theater introduces the Incubator Series, a program designed to support the creation of new work by emerging Chicago theater companies. The Monday evening showcases will offer a glimpse of the new projects through readings, performances, or works in process. DCA Theater Incubator Series showcase events include Dog and Pony Theater Company showcasing Watering Hole. That will be on Monday, August 25th. Infusion Theater presents a new play development reading series that can be seen on Monday, September 22nd. And The Plagiarists will showcase The Wreck of the Medusa that can be seen on Monday, December 22nd. The events are free, but reservations are highly encouraged. Visit dcatheater.org. Again, that's dcatheater.org. Chicago Shakespeare Theater has announced the casting of Peter Schaefer's classic Amadeus, which is being directed by Associate Artistic Director Gary Griffin. Amadeus follows the life of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart and his rival composer Salieri in the Viennese court. Robbie Collier-Sublett will play Amadeus, while Robert Sea is Salieri. Elizabeth Lido is pinned to play Constance. The show also features Lance Baker, Danielle Brothers, and John Rieger. It runs from September 6th through November 9th at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater. For more information about the show, please visit chicagoshakes.com. Prop Theater's open-run hit His Honor has been put on hold for this July and August due to star Neil Giantoli being sent to the hospital for a minor staph infection. No worries, however, His Honor will grace the Beverly Arts Center again this September. Click on over to Theater in Chicago's Now Playing section for more information on the show. And Neil, get well soon. And I mean very soon. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Chris Bender and Sylvia Hernandez de Stasi for giving us the honor of interviewing them this week. I would also like to thank Ann Nicholson Weber and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And I would also like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So until next Monday, I am your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, keep talking theater.